I'll be brief today. It's basically a ha'ara, but one that is relevant very directly to what we've spoken about so far, and actually a very important insight into our core obligation during the Aser Shemei Tshuva. So hopefully it's a very valuable ha'ara. So the question comes up, is one obligated to ask for mechila if one has mazikt, somebody has damaged somebody's property? And here it seems like there is a difficult to understand chiluk within the Rambam. You saw the Rambams, right? The two Rambam and Hilchos Tshuva. What does he say? Right, what does he tell us?
That if you damage someone, you have to worry about it. So you have to do that.
So in Hilchos Tshuva, he writes that one has to be meratza the person who he is either chovo, or if he steals from him, if he is gozel mechavero, so you shouldn't think that you're off the hook just by returning the item or by paying the restitution. You have an obligation to ask for mechila. And this essentially is based on a Mishnah in Bava Kamma, which says in Perek HaChovel, you saw the Mishnah, right, that if you're chovel b'chavero, if you inflict harm on someone, so then you have to pay, but it's not enough to pay. You also are obligated to levakesh mechila. You have to ask him for his forgiveness, for his waiving of any tainus. So the question that's asked is, when it comes to Hezek in Hilchos Chovel and Mazik, we find that he draws a distinction between Chavala and Hezek, and that regarding Hezek, he says that one is obligated to pay, but once he pays, he's done. Doesn't have to ask for mechila. Hi.
Can we say that Dibor, like Lashon Hara, let's say, is under Hezek?
No, so Lashon Hara is a more complicated question. On the surface, one should have to ask for mechila. There are a lot of challenges that are involved in that, and God willing, we will speak about that during the Lanathon on Monday. So that's a much more complex issue, so we'll leave that for then. But in terms of the issue of Hezek, so it's hard to understand why is there a chiluk that's drawn between Hezek and Gezel. Now this is particularly difficult if one assumes, as one of the angles we considered in our Hakdama, that the actual Isser involved in Hezek is Gezel. Maybe it's easier if I read you the language of the Rambam, maybe that'll be, just to focus a little bit more. So the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva. So what was the source in Hilchos Tshuva? Right, let's just open that up, just maybe it's probably better to see it inside. So it's true of a Bayes Tess. Right, so his language was Right, so it's very clear that there has to be a request from Mechila. One could even ask why he says it so many times in this paragraph, but it's very clear that that is necessary for Gezel, and that is necessary for Chavala. However, once we get into Hilchos Chovel Mazik, right, so there I told you to look at Perek Hey Halacha Tes. So there his language is Eino Dome Mazik Chaveiro Bagufo Mazik Mono Shamazik Momon Chaveiro Kevin Shishule Mashu Chayv L'Shalim Niskapelo Hezek, you pay, you're done. Aval Chovel B'Chaveiro Afal Pishonos L'Chavishu Dvarim Ein Niskapelo B'Chaval, it's not true. So the very strong distinction he's drawing here between Chavala and Hezek. Now, differences between Chavala and Hezek in general, we spoke a little bit about. They may have a big hashgafic difference. We spoke about that it could be that the mumminess is really for a different purpose between the two. It's interesting to explore what are the chilukim that exist between Chavala and Hezek. But Hezek and Gezel, so we had drawn a possible correlation according to Ben Yona and according to a few others. So it's very striking that there should be such a chiluk drawn. So what is the difference between the two? So the Lachem Mishnah has an approach, and there are those who question it. If you look, for example, in the just to give a general introduction about sources regarding this Lechem Mishnah, that if you look in the Shabzi Frankel edition of the Rambam, in the Mafteich in the back, so you'll see he brings many sources that disagree with this Lechem Mishnah. However, there is a lot to be said for what he says. And if you'd like, I can give you some makoros of some recent articles. There's articles in some of the journals that you can find in the library, written in the past few decades, of authors who bring support and proof for this distinction. So essentially, what is the chiluk? The assumption he makes is that when it comes to gezel, the person who took it is benefiting. And that's the key difference. Because since the one who took it is benefiting, the assumption is he must have done this deliberately as a goal for himself. And that creates an offense and a sense of violation to the victim. While when it comes to Hezek, since there wasn't any personal benefit, so then it doesn't create the same personal hurt, the same emotional offense to the victim, and therefore you don't have to address that. You don't have to apologize for that. So that's very interesting. And among those who object to the Lechem Mishnah, they raise the question, well, why should it matter? What exactly are you apologizing for? Are you apologizing for how much you enjoyed the Avera? You're apologizing for the hurt, the victim. So if the victim loses $100, what difference does it make whether you stole $100 or whether you broke $100 worth of his stuff? In the end of the day, it's $100 lost either way. So, why should it matter? So again, this is an issue that's addressed in some of these later articles. And you can understand really the distinction, because what the Lechem Mishnah is saying is that the offense is different. That he's not saying that you have to apologize more because you benefited more. He's saying the fact that you benefited makes it more hurtful to the victim. Makes it more of a deliberate disregard for that person's interests on behalf of your own interests. And therefore, that's personal. One of the articles I mentioned points to Rashi in Parsha Shoftim when the psukim there talk about the people who have the right to go back from war,
And the question is asked.
And the question is asked, who is there here who has built a house and hasn't had a chance to live in it yet, who has planted a garden, hasn't had a chance to have a vineyard, hasn't had a chance to benefit from it yet. And Rashi emphasizes over there that he'll have tsar from somebody else getting what he should have had. So there the suggestion is that yes, indeed, somebody else's benefit does contribute to his tsar. But I think the Halacha Mishnah is even saying it from a slightly different direction, but it goes to the degree in which he is offended by the decision of the offender. That the offender, because he was pursuing his own goals in the disregard of your goals, so that's hurtful. If he just happened to break something, it doesn't necessarily have the same malice of forethought, and paying for it can atone without a bakashas mechila. So this tells us a lot, both conceptually and practically, about the chiyuv bakashas mechila. That we have a number of approaches as to what mechila is about. Here the Mishnah that you saw, where Mishnah in Yuma tells us clearly that Yom Kippur is not effective until you ask for mechila. So what's the purpose of that? Is the purpose because the person has a taina on you and he's able to press charges, he has a claim he can bring, so you need the claim to be dropped? Is that the whole issue?
Well, doesn't the Rambam say that if the person says not to have a claim, then the fall comes on the head?
So it depends what we're talking about. So there is a certain point after which, if you have gone through the proper process of asking for mechila and the person refuses to forgive, so then it's not your problem anymore, which is itself a fascinating idea, because that itself tells us a little something about what's going on. If the whole point was to get the person to give up a claim that they have, so one would think that either they do or they don't. You're not going to get what you want as the penitent if you ask enough times and you still don't get the right answer. Right? We wouldn't say that if you want to borrow your father's car and he keeps saying no, if you ask him 3 times, okay, now you get to take it. Right? Nothing else in life works that way. So that seems to suggest that there is something else going on here. And they tell a joke about yeshiva guys. Say that the yeshiva guy knows that when he puts sugar in his coffee and he stirs it in, that the coffee gets sweeter. But he's not sure how that happens. Is it that the sugar makes it sweeter? Or maybe it's the stirring that makes it sweeter. And the sugar is just the shear that when it dissolves, so then he knows that he's stirred enough. So that chakira could be relevant here also. That is the inyan of mechila, that you have to get the mechila? Or maybe no. Maybe it's like the stirring. The inyan is the asking. And that when you obtain the mechila, that's like the sugar dissolving. That's the siman that you asked well enough. So that's a chakira one could ask here. And it could be that the tachlis of asking mechila is really the process. So the process could be itself an act of tshuva. Maybe that's why there's a din of asking. And maybe that's why you have this din, that if you go through the process sufficiently and the other party still isn't mochel, then maybe it still works. Or alternatively, maybe the purpose of asking mechila is not about the claim, but it's about fixing the relationship. Because we have a notion in Chazal that the effectiveness of Yom Kippur is contingent on the achdus of the Jewish people. That if the Jews are all together, so then the Kodesh Baruch Hu is mechaper, the Kodesh Baruch Hu is mochel. So therefore, if we have broken relationships before Yom Kippur, we have to fix them. So it could be that's actually, as some suggest, the two different Lashonos that you find in the two Mishnayos that you saw. That by Bava Kamma, it's just talking about dropping a claim. So the language is Yivakesh, Mechila. And in Hilchos Yom Kippurim, in Yuma, the Mishnah is talking about fixing the relationship. So there, the language is Ad Sheyiratzes Chaveiro. That you have to actually appease the person. And there, it's about fixing the interpersonal issue, separate and beyond from any other component here. So that's what the Lechem Mishnah is saying, that to the extent that there is an interpersonal issue, that has to be addressed. So if that's the case, so that's where he draws his distinction. And presumably it's not an absolute distinction. I saw in some svarim that raised a question on this, and I'm not so sure how powerful the question is. So they say, oh, so then what would you say if he stole something, but then he gave it back the second he stole it, so he didn't benefit from it at all? A question like that doesn't bother me from a couple of angles. But there's a lot of answers to that question, but part of it is that I don't know if it's an absolute distinction that the Rambam is saying there'll never be a case where the Gezel has a very reduced kind of mechila, and he's not saying there's never going to be a case where Hezek will require mechila. I think he's saying is a category. So Hezek doesn't necessarily require mechila, and Gezel, Menastam, does require mechila. But a very important lesson from this for our core obligation, mechila is the most important mitzvah that we have in Elul and Tishrei. Of all the other mitzvahs that we have, shofar and lulav and sukkah and fasting on Yom Kippur, so many mitzvahs, but it's only this mitzvah that the Mishnah says the whole thing doesn't work if you don't do it. Asking mechila is the only one that blows up the whole season if it's not properly fulfilled. So when it comes to asking for mechila, so what we're seeing here, a very important horror, is that it's not really calibrated to the Avera. It's calibrated to the damage to the relationship. So to whatever degree there is a damaged relationship, that's where you have to ask for mechila. And if there is not a damage to the relationship, so then you don't have to ask for mechila, even if there is an avera there. And if that's the case, it tells us a lot about how we go about this process. Now, there is an interesting shaila that's discussed. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this, which I'll mention in more detail in a second. You can find it in the Choshen Mishpat and Chelek Aleph in Siman Peches. And later on, the tshuva is Adnei Paz in Chelek Aleph in Siman Peches also talks about this issue. But just to mention Rav Moshe's discussion, let's say you stole something and you're embarrassed to admit it. So you want to return it by sneaking it back into the person's possessions. So does that fulfill your obligation vis-a-vis this gezeilah? If you return the object in a surreptitious way, you just drop it back in their wallet or something like that. So is that effective? So Rav Moshe assumes, and Adnei Paz writes this also, that if the person never knew about it from beginning to end, so then that could be effective. If they didn't know that you stole it and you put it back before they ever found out, so then that could be sufficient and you wouldn't have to ask mechila for having stolen it. But if they did find out that it was stolen, so then it's not enough just to return it. You have to ask mechila. And Rav Moshe goes in there about how the whole Indian that we say, Machaseb Shav Lo Yatzliach, it's not going to be a good idea to try to cover up your averus if you want to be successful at tshuva. So you have to take the hit. You have to be able to come forward and acknowledge what you did. So therefore, he writes that it's not going to be enough just to put the object of the money back, but you really have to write a letter to the person and say, please be mochel me. Now, it's interesting, there's a separate discussion poskim, not there in this tshuva, but elsewhere, about whether letters are effective for mechila in general, and the concern is that maybe it's not enough of a humbling experience. Maybe it really needs to be face to face. Although presumably, even if one says like that, sometimes you need to write the letter in order to get that opening conversation happening. So I think everyone would agree that if it's a useful first tool, so then it should for sure be used. The question is that everything? Hi.
I assume texting would fall into that category?
Big time, yeah. It's interesting. I mean, texting was a big issue. A lot of literature about just how far removed we are from this. There actually is an interesting discussion about this. Shari Turkel, in one of her books, wrote a lot of interesting books about the impact of technology. And in one of her books, she has an explicit discussion about a study she did with high school girls. And they wrote that they don't feel like it's really meaningful when they get apologies through text messages because there isn't any face-to-face confrontation. And it's a way of just dodging the actual exchange that has to happen. So it's a metzias. Like I said, it's a question of, you know, you don't need a gemara for that. You know, you need a metzias. The question is it going to be effective in terms of fixing the relationship? So you have a Torah Mata, right? They did a study, so it's not effective. It doesn't have that impact.
Really, what do people do though, like when they didn't have the technology and they did need to apologize to someone, but like, I don't know, you didn't know when, you didn't have to get in touch with them? Or
so there used to be a thing, this was before you were born, people used to write down words on some type of paper or parchment or whatever it is, and they used to have other individuals whose job it was to take those written down pieces of paper or parchment and deliver them. Now we call them mailmen. Back then they had other names. It was Pony Express. It was whatever it was. They had had ways of actually bringing the written letters. So now we live in a door where who needs such things? But once upon a time, that used to be the way.
So like, if they couldn't find the person, but if they can't find them in person, so that's their, so I guess that's...
So that's what the postgame discussed, and the postgame discussed whether letters work, because it's interesting, there was a front page story in one of the Jewish weeklies a few years ago about, you know, can you ask Mechila through email? So, you know, the implication is a new Shiloh, but it's really not, because letters were always discussed, you know, in this way. I didn't mean to hope your muscle if that came across. Didn't mean to imply anything about you. We're saying, like, in general, I think we don't relate to letters being a thing. But once upon a time, there used to be letters, and people, and the Shiloh was asked in that context.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, but just like, what if the answer was no?
Yeah, so it would take months to find out, and then they have to do it all over again. Right? You'd have to start way before Yom Kippur in order. So that's the advantage of the text. You know, then at least you can find out quicker that it's not working, and we'll move on to the next step. But I think the text of the emails or the letters can be very useful to get the conversation happening. But what these postmen were saying is that it needs to be a real face-to-face discussion. But it's interesting. So in this tshuva, Moshe is not misyafis that whole discussion so much. And he says that you could write a letter. You should write a letter as opposed to not writing a letter. And assuming there's no chiyuv mechila, you should write a letter together with the returned item. He considers there in that context, says, because we have this idea that if you want to be matzliach and tshuva, you have to own up to it. So he says, it's true that maybe that's just for the purpose of asking mechila. So then the question could be asked, as he notes there, maybe anonymous could still work. That if you write that anonymous letter saying, I stole this from you and I'm really sorry, I'm genuinely contrite over what I did, will you forgive the offense? Then maybe it's theoretically possible that that could be an in-between step, that you could ask mechila without identifying yourself. But that there should be some mechiyuv bakashas mechila for gzeila, that's, you know, again, that's essentially what the Rambam says, right? That there has to be a bakashas mechila. So in this situation he's describing, says that maybe the exception would be that if the person never found out about it, so then that you could possibly be off the hook for that. So again, what does that show you? It's the same avera, right? The gzeila is one way or another. It's still when we discussed if Hezek is Gezel, Gezel is for sure Gezel, right? It's the same Gezel. The question is that there is the separate component of how much was it hurtful, how much did it offend the person, and the Chi of Mechila is calibrated to that. So it's just a very important Ha'arah for this season to realize again the Chi of Mechila is, and again, I hope you're with the Mechila, not no offense intended, but to the extent that there is a chi of mechila, it's calibrated to the actual offense and not to any type of, and it's not based on the nature of the avera itself. Okay, so we have mincha, so we'll stop here. See you God willing tomorrow morning, and it should be a successful.